Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week.
And that email, I've got to tell you, was interesting because so many people worry about, is somebody going to recognize them? Is their voice recognizable? Hi there, I'm Carol the Coach, and I've got to tell you, you can always call the show at 646-595-3284. But if you're really concerned about confidentiality, and I suspect that you are, you can send me an email, and I will read it over the air, and I'll answer it to the best of my ability. And I will be happy to have you call in and see if I got it right. So I wanted to share an email that I got this week. It's from a woman, Sandy, and she says, Hi, Carol. I know you're a busy lady, but perhaps you would have time to respond to my email. I don't know if we should chat, maybe even consider a Skype appointment. I don't know. That's a gray area. And maybe just writing in my journal would help. I don't have any friends or family that really know the situation between me and Sam. And just this weekend, I found a long history of months of porn searches, some of which were pretty bad. It's the lying, the betrayal that I've lived with for 3 years, his broken promises that have been words only with little action, and it's the way he holds on to his secret life. I've been in the dark, and boy, that's how a lot of partners feel. They're in the dark. That's part of the betrayal. It's the secrecy more than even the behavior. So she says, I've been in the dark and have given him the benefit of the doubt because I've chosen to trust and believe what he says. If I didn't, I'd either have to end the marriage or go crazy. Now that I've seen clearly the months that he's lied, I've just spent trusting him, and I'm not even 100% sure that I want to continue in this marriage. I do love him so deeply, but he puts his disease and his escapes, books, movies, etc., as a priority over our marriage and his wife. I don't want to continue this way. You know, October 11th will mark 3 years since discovery, 3 years of empty promises and roller coaster rides. And he's letting me believe that he was on top of his game and that I was overreacting if I felt something that wasn't quite right. I continue to work hard on myself and our relationships so that I can get the most out of my own self-esteem. Now, she continues, but I want to stop right there for a second. you know that this is a show about sexual addiction. And if you are an addict, I want you to work on empathizing with what this woman says. And imagine that she or he is your partner. And it's not just the fact that you're looking at porn, you've had affairs, maybe you've exposed yourself, maybe you're into exhibitionism, maybe you've wanted to do swinging, be a part of orgies. It's not all that. More than that, if you peel away all those sexually addictive behaviors, it's the lying and the betrayal that bother you the most. And so this young woman, Sandy, has had 3 years where she wanted to believe him. And I actually talked with her over the phone. And what I know to be true is that she had glimpses of the fact that he was having trouble. It wasn't like he had a shining record the entire time. But clearly, he has been working on things. She had no idea it was as bad as it was. And now, after doing some exploring, discovering, excavating, and all that stuff, she realizes it's way worse than she thought. And this results in her not trusting him in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, what she said to me was that her husband swears up and down that although he has had this problem, and he's admitting to it now, there are things that she doesn't believe about him that have to do with everyday occurrences. You know, it's kind of like what we all learned as kids. When you cry wolf over and over and over again, people stop believing you. Well, let's flip that around, if you will. When you feign honesty and you talk about the fact that you're working a program, when you are doing everything you're supposed to be doing, but you still continue to have that secret life, the consequences are not only do you tear your partner up, you tear your relationship up, which I know you don't want to do as an addict, but then they can't believe anything that you have said before. And boy, is that tough, because you feel like, why should be believed? But really, you know that you shouldn't. Because what this addiction requires in recovery is 100% honesty. And that means you have to work a strong program. Now, last week, I talked about that recovery point sheet. And I had many people email me and say, hey, I want that. I want to start seeing how my behaviors accumulate, if you will. And we're that kind of driven society. We're outcome-driven. And, you know, if we can put points on things and add up our points and we get extra points, it makes us feel better about the behaviors. There is nothing wrong with that. So, again, if you want my recovery point worksheet that I actually got from a client who may have gotten it from the great Milton Magnus. I don't know. I know my clients worked with him. But this does not have any kind of copyright on it. I'll be happy to send it to you. So you need to call me at, area code 317-847-2244. Leave me a message. Or email me at carolthecoach@AOL.com. And I will send that to you. You know, because here is a woman who wants to believe her husband. She loves her husband. But she's got to start protecting herself. And so we talked about how she could do that. And I told Sandy, you know, polygraph tests are in your future. And what that means is, if he really wants to stay with her, he's going to need polygraph tests, not to bust him, but to build up the trust. You know, she can check every 4 months and find out, has he looked at porn, has he masturbated, has he been with prostitutes, has he had any affairs, has he been on Craigslist, whatever the behaviors are. And when that comes back in a negative way, she can feel more assurance. Now, there's no doubt that a lot of the guys that I work with and women, they're scared to do that. Let's face it, they're not 100% accurate, but we as certified sexual addictions therapists have trained certain polygraphers to do the screening, the preparation, and the tests in a certain way. I'm not saying that I know much about the tests, but what I have done is I've worked with people excessively that know how to give these tests properly. And they make sure that your central nervous system is calmed down and that you know what to expect and you feel comfortable with the polygrapher and you feel comfortable with the test and you know what the questions are going to be. So there are no surprises and the test ends up being very, very accurate. So that's one of the things that I told Sandy she needed to do with her husband. And you know, he's working a Recovery Nation program because he does not believe in a higher power. So 12-step does not work for him. So he needs to bump up that game. He needs to get a mentor. He needs to find a sponsor. He needs to get in a good group. He needs a variety of the recovery tools we say are essential to healthy recovery. You know, just like one of my guys said this week, he said, you know what, after talking to an AA person who's been clean and sober for 18 years, I realized I was trying to work a 7-day program in 3 days. In other words, he was not going into enough meetings. He was not doing enough of the readings, the recovering readings. He was not doing enough of the spiritual readings. He was not meditating. He was not journaling. He was not seeing me as regularly as he needed to. And he was getting half-assed results. I hate that this has to be so much work, but this is what I promise. When you work it, it works, and it stops being work, but something that you look forward to. And so, if you're an addict, I know you're afraid. You don't want to do the work. But what I promise is, it'll be the best thing you ever do, and you'll learn to not only depend on it, but to love it. All the recovery tools. Okay, I want to finish this email before we have our guest, who is, by the way, Angie Ridings, who is going to be talking about how do you find recovery and how do you maintain it? And interestingly enough, Angie, in the midst of her writing me some questions that I needed to ask her, she said to me, hey, I want to change this a little bit. I have a great analogy that I use with my clients, and I'd like to talk about it on your show. It's kind of like cultivating a garden. Well, I have to tell you, I'm a therapist of 33 years, and one of the things that I know to be true is when people talk in metaphors, and this is based on the work of the great Milton Erickson, it somehow permeates the subconscious in such a way that they work more effectively and it promotes change in a healthier way. So I was all for it. So Angie Ridings is coming on the show here in just a few minutes to talk about recovery and to talk about what are the key components, to offer you a free resource. You'll want to stay a part of the show so that you can access this free resource. And, you know, just give you a little bit about her life. She's out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, but as you well know, it matters not where we're from. It's the resources and the products and the expertise that we can share with you that makes all the difference in the world. And Angie is a CSAT, which of course means she's a sexual addiction certified therapist. And she knows about long-term recovery, and she's got a plan to talk about just for you. All right. So I want to finish this email, and it says, you know, though I did the right thing and I worked hard on myself, I feel like I've been played the fool. I've been good in taking care of myself and focusing on the relationship, but I'm tired of not being treated or getting what I deserve from the marriage. I want to be treated with respect, love, and how a wife and a person deserves to be treated. The marriage and me are not priorities for him. I'm always there to give love and to be supportive, and he expects it, and so I don't get much of a thought, especially when he's acting out the way he has been. Anyway, the reason I even began typing this was because he is my love, my best friend, and who I go to when I'm feeling sad. And now I'm tremendously sad because I had to move to the other bedroom and feel that if I don't see a result this time, I will have to end the marriage. And that makes me sad, and I feel so alone and lonely. I don't have anyone to talk to about this. Will you please advise me, Carol? So, Sandy, what I would tell you to do is find yourself a certified sexual addictions therapist, and you go. And I would decide what are your boundaries. And I would order a polygraph test. And I would have a certified sexual addictions therapist explain that it isn't to bust him. It's to support him. It's to hold him accountable. And it's to begin to rebuild the trust. And I would talk with you, if you were my client, about the recovery tools. And if a man is not using the recovery tools every day, he's not working the program, and you probably need to say goodbye. If he's not willing to do the work, you're in for a whole host of problems. And so, you know, just sit with him and talk with him and tell him what you need to feel safe. It's not that you're ordering him around in any way, shape, or form. It's letting him know what you need. And then, Sandy, continue to get your work in. You know, go to that certified sexual addictions therapist. Find out what you can do to get healthier. Find out about your boundaries. Break those chains of codependency. And have faith in yourself. And know that whatever is meant to happen is going to happen. So only you can work on you. You didn't cause it. You can't control it. And you can't cure it. You can only work on you. So, Sandy, thank you so much for your email. And I hope that you're listening tonight because Angie Ridings is on the line, and she is going to talk about long-term recovery. So welcome, Angie, to the show. How are you?
Hi, Carol. I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm excited because my listeners want to hear about long-term recovery. And so you have some tools and tips to help them with that, and you want to kind of talk about that within the analogy of a garden. So why'd you choose a garden as an analogy for recovery?
Well, I chose a garden, Carol, because, you know, I'm not an expert gardener, but I think everybody or most people understand the basics of gardening. So I think even without having had one before, just about anybody can relate to this analogy.
Well, that makes sense totally. And you know, we want to talk about what are the key essentials to tending to recovery. And so tell me, what are the parallels between what are the essentials for recovery and what are the key essentials to tending a garden?
Okay, well, I'm just going to list the 10 essentials, and then if you want, we can talk about them more in depth. What I did is I identified 10 things that are absolutely essential to gardening, and what they are is planning, timing, climate, soil, seeds, tools, water, sun, protection, and weeds.
Okay, now how do you see them as being metaphorically similar to the addiction and recovery?
Well, you know, everybody that starts out in recovery needs a plan. And it's just like when you're establishing a garden, you have to know exactly where it's going to be, where the best place is to grow, what your dimensions are, how far to spread the plants out, where you're going to put it in your yard. And the way I see this is it relates to recovery, because we really need to think about what our personal recovery plan is. You know, in sobriety, we need to think about staying away from people, places, and things that are going to steal our nutrients as a person, so to speak, if you relate it to gardening. We also need to have a home base, a safe place to stay close to. And what I learned about gardening is that it's usually good to put it close to your home. That way you, the critter's out and it's safer that way. So we all need a safe place and a home base. And in recovery, we have to be careful not to skip ahead too quickly. People that join the 12-step community can sometimes work through the steps too fast, not give each step the proper time and learning. And, you know, this handout I've put together for people, it goes through all 10 of these, and each one has questions that you can ask yourself as you go when you put together your plan. Now, as far as timing...
So give me an idea of some of the questions.
Okay.
That one might ask as they're putting together their plan.
Yeah, so with the very first essential of planning, planning your recovery, you might ask yourself, what does sobriety mean to me? What compulsive behaviors do I need to be in recovery for? So some people struggle with not just sex addiction, but other addictions as well. Do I need to slow down in recovery? Do I have someone I'm accountable to? Are there people, places, and things that I need to stay away from? Do I have a home base or a safe place that I can go where I'm not tempted or distracted from my recovery? And where exactly is that place? So those are some of the questions you would ask yourself in the very first phase of this, of establishing your plan.
And if you would... people come to see you, and they obviously know you're a CMAT and a CSAT. Now, tell our listening audience, because they haven't heard much about CMAT, what is a CMAT?
A CMAT is a Certified Multiple Addiction Therapist. So if someone's struggling with not just sex addiction, but chemicals of some kind, alcohol or other drugs, maybe gambling addiction, shopping, compulsive shopping or hoarding, things of that nature, you know, you want to go see a CMAT, somebody that is educated on multiple addictions.
Okay, so if somebody came to see you, obviously they would want to find out how they could control their addiction, and sex addiction being a process addiction is so much tougher than the average addiction. It's, you know, we compare it to drugs or alcohol, but we know that it's even harder to kick than drugs and alcohol. So how would the garden be different? What would you be doing with a client that very first session?
Well, in the very first session, I would, in addition to doing a very thorough history, I would ask them, what behaviors do you have that get you into trouble? And I would want to know if they use maybe alcohol or other types of drugs or some other behavior other than sex to maybe numb themselves from their sex addiction. You know, typically people come to see me for a primary addiction. They don't usually say, I have multiple addictions. They usually say, I have a sex addiction. And so what I want to know is, what are the other things they're using to medicate themselves when they're trying not to act out sexually? And so we will talk about what all those different things are. And sometimes they don't really even know what they are until we get further into the counseling process and I find that they're using other things to avoid sexual behavior.
And why do you believe that their sexual addiction behavior fuses with other addictions?
Well, I think that, as you mentioned, sex addiction is it's a very difficult thing to struggle with. And it can be a painful process to start feeling those intense feelings that they had been avoiding, and they may still be using some avoidance behaviors. And some people even have other things that are fused with their sex addiction, like maybe cocaine along with their sexual acting out. In other words, maybe they need a drug to act out. So, you know, they would really have to tackle both those things at the same time if they're going to achieve sobriety.
Okay. So now back to the garden, because clearly you are offering on your website some free resources to help people with these 10 essential tips. So give us the website that they can attain the resources, and then we'll continue to talk about what do addicts need.
Okay, sure. My website is angelawritingscounseling.com. It's A-N-G-E-L-A-R-I-D-I-N-G-S counseling.com. And on that website, on the very first page, the home page, if someone were to go there, they would click on resources. And I have several things there that are free, one of which is an outline of our discussion today. It's a handout that goes through all the questions and all the different essentials, the 10 essentials. And there's some free assessments on there that a lot of other CSATs commonly use and some frequently asked questions.
Okay, so now how does someone get started on developing their, if you will, garden plan, their recovery?
Well, I highly recommend having a qualified therapist. It can be tough trying to work your own plan alone. And the CSAT community is growing. I know here in Oklahoma, we haven't had too many, but we're starting to get a lot more. So the word is spreading that sex addiction is a big deal, and I would highly recommend finding somebody that is certified locally. And if you struggle with more than one addiction, I would say find someone that either has a lot of work experience dealing with substance abuse or gambling or whatever other struggle you have, or find someone that's also a CMAT like myself.
Okay, and now why is it important to have all the key components? I mean, one more time, list the key components as you see them for recovery.
Okay, so we would start out with a plan. And then we would establish the timing, and then we would talk about the climate. And, you know, I might need to get into some of these more in depth, but then we also have the soil, the seeds, the tools, the water, the sun, the protection, and then the weeds. And all of these are essential to gardening. I wouldn't leave any of these out because the garden's going to suffer. And it's just like in recovery, if we put all these pieces together that we know works, the formula for success, as Dr. Carnes likes to call it, then you're going to have much better odds of having successful recovery and staying sober and having healthy sexuality and healthy relationships.
Okay, and so one more time, you said Dr. Carnes calls it what?
The formula for success. Yeah, all the components you would need. He has a formula that he's put together of what makes up a very successful recovery.
Well, and formula I know that success. He says that no addict is stronger. I'm sorry, no person is stronger than the addict. But along with the committee, they can beat this addiction. And it sounds like it's that formula for success. And what he refers to is, you know, when you're an addict, you need 12-step meetings or some sort of recovery tool. You need a mentor or a sponsor. You need a good certified sexual addiction therapist. You need a group. You need fellowship in that 12-step or recovery program where you make calls before and after the group so that you can build on that spirituality. And so I like the fact that, you know, you're talking about the key components of this garden. Now, you said the soil. What would that be comparable to in recovery?
Okay. Well, the soil, you know, for a garden to be fully prepared to plant, you have to prepare the soil by tilling it and making it easier to dig in. The richer the soil, the better. So in recovery, the soil is actually you and me. And some questions that we might ask ourselves at this stage in the process is, am I teachable? Can I accept suggestions from others who know about recovery? Am I willing to try hard and do the work? Am I doing all that I can to prepare myself to have successful recovery? Am I willing to throw away my old life, the one that got me into trouble, and commit to being a better me? And am I willing to make the changes in my life that need to be done to make sobriety successful? Am I tired of doing things my way? So that's how I see the soil, is preparing ourselves, cultivating that that need to really delve into the recovery process.
Well, that's a great point. And so what resources do you recommend for someone who's just getting started in recovery of sexual addiction, and then maybe even another addiction that they didn't even know was fused with their sexual addiction, such as drinking or drugging or workaholism or gambling?
Yeah, you know, there are so many resources online, and I know that I have a blog online that people are more than welcome to subscribe to. It's free. And I'm going to put this handout on my website. It's going to be free. And I know that a lot of other CSATs have blogs and write about these things. And that's a good place to get information. And I really, really think it's so important to just be in therapy with someone that is qualified, because I think they can, in addition to all the resources online, they can help you. And there's so many great books out there that have been written for sexual addiction. I know Dr. Carnes has a lot of great books. Rob Weiss has some great books. And, you know, there's so much out there. There really is. And I just really want to encourage people to get your hands on some of that literature and read the blogs and really just get involved in your community, in the support groups, the 12-step programs, SAA, you know, all those things are so important in recovery, and I really think that's how you do it. You talk to other people who know how the recovery process works, who have done it, and you can sit down and you can work through this handout that I have and just start answering these questions and maybe start journaling about some of these things and ask yourself, am I teachable? Am I willing to start doing the hard work, and just really start putting some thought into it and prepare yourself.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, you obviously have a passion for this kind of work. How did you get involved and interested in the addiction field?
Yeah, I'm very passionate about recovery, especially addiction recovery. I've been in recovery for 10 years. I am so different now from what I used to be. My life has changed dramatically. I think what really lit a fire in me is losing my younger brother 3 years ago to his addiction. And he passed away from, he was intoxicated and got a brain injury and was in ICU for a few days. And, you know, that was really, really hard on me and my family. And I just really got even more passionate about it after that. I thought, you know, there's so many people that are struggling, and if I can just help a few people, that are willing to get the help, I'll do it. And so I've been working really hard to get educated and get the certification and try and provide free stuff online, because I know that not everybody can afford to get therapy maybe. So, yeah, that's the reason why I'm doing this.
Okay, so you really understand the shame that can affect addicts and perhaps the obstacles that addicts face, because you too were an addict, and you know, you certainly can pass on this one, but were you a sex addict, a drug addict, or a substance abuse addict, an alcoholic?
Yeah, I'm a recovering alcoholic. You know, I started drinking at a very early age, around 12, and it just got out of control from there, and especially as an adult, I just had so much pain, and like you said, the shame, the guilt that you carry from your secret life and from your behavior. And, you know, I did my fair share of sexual acting out when I was drinking, and it was pretty rough. So I really do understand what the addict's going through. I've lived it. I've been through the recovery process. I'm still in recovery. I plan to be in recovery the rest of my life. It's just my new lifestyle.
And you use these same recovery tools that you're talking to others about?
Yes. Yes, I do. You know, one of my personal mottos is that I will not ask my clients to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. So I've done these things. I've lived it, and I know that it works. I know that the process can bring about success if people are willing to do it.
Well, and, you know, I really believe that's so important when you've got somebody who has worked the tools, the steps, and they know what it's like to do that dance of not really wanting to do it, but knowing they need to. And I was saying earlier in the program that there's a shift that occurs. When you do it and you work it, it does work. And when it really works, you go from going, oh, I've got a journal, to looking for that journal and being excited to connect with that inner self. So, you know, the shift is so important. It happens naturally when you truly work it. Now, you've been in the field how long?
I changed careers back in 2007, so I've been in the field since 07. This is my second career, so it's another reason why I'm so passionate about it. It's just what I really wanted to do.
Absolutely, and I am talking with Angie Rivings, and Angie has a webpage. It is Angie. Well, actually, it's AngelaWritingsCounseling.com. AngelaWritingsCounseling.com, and that's R-I-D-I-N-G-S, counseling.com. And she also has a Facebook page, and that is www.facebook.com, Angie Rivings LPC. And so, again, Angie, the free tools that people can access from today's show can be found where?
If you go to my webpage, AngelaWritingsCounseling.com, from the homepage, you'd click on Resources. And from there, I have a link that it says Radio Show Interview. And if you click on that, they'll see your smiling face, first thing there, and then they can download the document right there. And I've also added a link to it from my blog, so if people wanted to go to my blog, they could certainly find it there as well.
Okay, and you give helpful advice. For instance, there are some questions to ask yourself, and people can obtain that when they go to your website. And some of the questions are, what does sobriety mean to me? What compulsive behaviors do I need to be in recovery for? Do I need to slow down in recovery? That's a really good question. Do I have someone I'm accountable to that can keep me moving at the right pace? And let me ask you, what made you suggest that you look inside yourself and ask yourself, do I need to slow down in recovery?
Well, I've seen it. People just jump into recovery with both feet, and they don't really stop to really work the steps and work it at a pace where they're truly getting it. And I've seen people just do it way too fast, and they get gung-ho, which there's nothing wrong with gung-ho, but if you're so gung-ho that you just speed through it and you don't take the time to have conversations with people and do the journaling and work with a sponsor and really work on yourself. The 12 steps are wonderful. I think everybody, even people that aren't in recovery, could benefit from the 12-step process. So you can do it too fast. It really does happen.
Okay, and then what do you do to motivate people or to help encourage people when they're not working it enough? You know, I had a man tonight in group who said, I was talking to somebody in AA, and he has 18 years sobriety, and he said, you know, the problem is I'm only working my program 3 days a week. And so that's a man that knew he needed to bump up his recovery tools. What do you say or do with a client who may not have embraced the tools the way he or she should?
Well, I like to get people thinking about what quality of life they really want. And if they can really reflect on, what do I want my life to be like in 10 years, 5 years? What do I want my legacy to be for my children? What memories do I want to leave for people? What do I want them to say about me? I think that really, it may not work for everyone, but I think it motivates a lot of people to really have a goal in mind as to what they want their life in general to really, what statement they want it to make, what do they want to say with their legacy, and you know, just to reflect on that and think about your vision for the future is so important.
Well, I love that you said legacy, because truly in Patrick Carnes' teaching, and I'm reminding our listeners that both you and I are certified sexual addictions therapists, and that means that we studied through the school of ITAP, and Patrick Carnes is the founder of that. So a lot of the materials are his. He certainly is the guru and the founder of sexual addiction to some degree. And he said that once you get healthy, it is absolutely your responsibility to work on your legacy. So you're asking your clients, even at the beginning of recovery, to kind of play it forward and look at what they would like their life to be. And then they have a snapshot to refer back to every time they feel some resistance or some obstacles in their own recovery. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I think that as therapists, our job is to try and instill just a little bit of hope. If we can just instill some hope in the person, then that hope really is what motivates people. And if they see that it really can be done and I can have a better life and I can change the cycle in my family and I can be sober from this, I don't have to let this control me, then they may not know how to get there. I mean, that's part of our job too as therapists, is helping them get there. But if they can at least see it, what they want it to look like, then they have something to shoot for. And if they're willing to get the right help, they don't have to figure it out on their own. There's lots of, again, lots of material out there, lots of literature, lots of therapists that are willing to help people get there. They just have to have that vision for the future.
Well, I 100% agree. And so I want to ask you, because you identify this on your free essential tips, you ask people to ask themselves, are there people, places, or things I need to plan on staying away from? Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. So in recovery, what we often talk about, especially early on, is what are your triggers? In other words, what's going to make you really want to fall back into that addictive behavior? And it can be certain places that are unhealthy. It can even be places that aren't necessarily unhealthy, but for whatever reason, they're triggers. And if you don't have to go there, don't go there. And there's certain people that can be very toxic and can sabotage our recovery. And you have to really ask yourself, is this somebody I need to have in my life? Is this someone I really need to be associating with? And things, I mean, there's, you know, there are items and maybe pornography materials or things that we would have around our home that can certainly be a trigger. And those need to be gotten rid of. You know, just remove them. Don't even have the temptation there. Set yourself up for success.
It's interesting because I was talking with a man who said that he's an avid golfer, but part of golfing is that after they get done golfing, they drink, they go to strip clubs, they look at porn on their phone, they exchange websites, and he said, oh my gosh, I have to replace my favorite thing to do, which is golf, with something else. He goes, I guess it's going to be 12-step meetings. And I suggested, you know what? I don't know that you need to do that, but what you clearly need to do is find people in fellowship in the 12-step meetings that love to golf like you do. So you're replacing the people, not necessarily the places or the things. And maybe in another instance, you'd be replacing the place, but not the people or the things. You know, you just got to customize it based on what your needs are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the other questions you ask is, do I have a home base, a safe place I can go where I'll not be tempted or distracted from my recovery? And if so, and hopefully so, where is that place? Give me some examples of some safe places.
Well, I hope that it's your home, but it's not always home. In other words, where you live. Sometimes it's a good friend's house. Sometimes it is a clubhouse, an AA clubhouse, or a sponsor's place, or the library, or somewhere where you can remove yourself from the stress and just relax and be yourself and recuperate and unwind. Everybody needs a place like that.
Well, that's a good, those are some good examples of where you might look for a safe place. And you said first and foremost the home, but if that's not the case, look for some other places. And certainly for a lot of men, and women too, but for men who have angry partners, being at home may not be safe because their wife is so angry, so hurt, feels so betrayed, that can be kind of a firing squad every time they come home. And so that's where fellowship can really be important and getting tools as to how to build the relationship and maybe how to wear Teflon a little bit so that they don't feel the pain of their wife's betrayal, hurt, and sadness to the degree where it makes them say, well, just forget it. I'm never going to make it work with my wife, so why not just keep doing what I'm doing and at least have a little bit of fun? So the environment is so, so important, and that's what you reference as the climate, correct?
Correct, yes.
And I'm a life coach as well as a psychotherapist, and we look at the 9 different types of environment, you know, your work and where you live and your home in particular, you know, your family environment. And so what we as certified sexual addictions therapists encourage our clients to do is build a fellowship where they truly have a friendship that's filled with, that is a healthy environment for them. Now, what would be some recommendations that you might have to actually look at whether their environment hurts or helps them?
Well, I would pay real close attention to how you're feeling in that environment. Are you feeling more stressed and anxious? Are you more depressed? Or does it help you be yourself? Can you relax? Is it calming? You know, I remodeled my bedroom a few years ago because it just, you know, I changed the kids' rooms and pretty much the whole house, but my bedroom had been neglected. And when I changed just a few simple things, the paint on the walls and hung some nice pictures and bought myself some new sheets, I could come in here and just decompress and relax. And there's just something about being in here that I can feel safe. And I feel safe in my home, but my bedroom especially is peaceful. So I would really pay attention to how you're feeling, and is it stirring up negative emotion or is it stirring up positive feelings for you?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And something as small as redoing your sacred space may actually help to self-soothe and make you feel comfortable again.
Yeah.
Again, I am talking with Angie or Angela Ridings, and she owns Angela Ridings Counseling, LLC. She's talking about Tending Your Garden, which is a worksheet that helps recovering addicts create the tools they need by offering 10 tips for building successful recovery. And, you know, you do it metaphorically by talking about the garden, but it really does make sense that in the same way that you take care of something so important as a garden, the food you eat, the flowers you smell, the ground you till, all that stuff is very similar to your own personal environment of sobriety. So I'm going to ask you, you make the analogy of water, and you say water and recovery would be learning better self-care, eating better, getting better quality sleep, getting enough sleep, exercise, having fun, spirituality for some, religion for some, and better balance in terms of responsibility. And, you know, Patrick Carnes talks about that craziness index. You know, mm-hmm. when your car's out of control and it's a filthy mess and you can't even find your keys because you got your mail in there and your kids' toys and blah, 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 it keeps you in an anxious state. So when you were talking about the water part of your tips, I thought very much about that outer circle when you do the 3 circles exercise. So talk a little bit about what the analogy of water is all about and how that can actually help recovery.
Yeah, you know, a garden has to have water or it will die. And water actually keeps the plants alive and helps them to grow and to even mature. And I really, truly believe that we all need water in our own way. All those things are so important. And really, if you think of it from a holistic view, we're not just talking about staying away from sexual acting out. We're talking about living a whole new way, living a healthier way. And a lot of people in recovery aren't very good at self-care. So it's important to learn how to even do that and what's considered good self-care. So all of us need to eat well, get good quality sleep, take care of our bodies, exercise. Having fun is so important, having things that you can do that you enjoy, maybe some spirituality somehow mixed in there based on your beliefs, and just having balance. Balance is so important because my balance can get so out of whack. I can easily overwork, and I have to watch that. My kids require a lot of time, but then I start feeling like I'm neglecting myself. So I just have to be really careful and have a nice, even balance of everything. And it's hard to do. It really is difficult. But I really, truly think those are the things that we need in recovery to really start living a whole new lifestyle and really living recovery every day.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with you. And so obviously water is an essential, and you're talking about the balance of life and spirituality, fun, exercise, and all the things that makes your life feel more meaningful. I really, really enjoy this garden metaphor. And so as we begin to end, is there anything else that you want to share with our listening audience, which is comprised of basically addicts, their partners, and clinicians?
Well, I would just add that that you can do it. I really, truly believe all of us are capable of having a better life and of being sober. And if anything, I just want to plant a tiny little seed of hope with everybody that's listening that you can have a better life and you can do it. You just have to work hard and you just have to commit to the process. And, you know, you're going to mess up. We all do. You're going to make mistakes. You have to learn from those mistakes and just really stick with it and know that it will get better.
Well, thank you so much, Angie, for helping us today learn long-term recovery tools. Again, I want to remind people that you can be, they can access your free tools at your website, and I am pulling that up right now. That is www.AngelaWritings, R-I-D-I-N-G-S, counseling with one L.com. And they can email you at angie.writings@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Angie. Look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks, Carol. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Okay. Have a week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, as you can see, she's got a lot of good tools. So get on her website and access those free resources. Again, go to our website and look for free resources. Angie has a lot of knowledge and has a passion for helping you. Okay, as we say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you at all times, so I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And I look forward to seeing you again. Please visit my new website, which is www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. And feel free to email me with any question that you have, carolthecoach@aol.com. I'd be more than happy to help you in any way that I can do. Now, next week, we've got a great author on. She's written a memoir called Reckless about what it's like to be a sex addict and love sex addicts, so I hope you'll tune into the show. And just remember, face your fears. Have the courage to be yourself, and have a great week. We'll see you soon.